And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Chase McCabe, Kenny Adams here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well out there. It was a late night last night, early morning this morning. Chase McCabe, what's going on? How are we doing?
A little tired, Rob, but you know what? It's okay. I think if the Predators had won, that would help things a little bit.
That would probably be different.
It is what it is. It's a tough one, but we'll break that game down, obviously. But Connor Ingram, man, I feel for that kid today because he deserved to win, and it was unfortunate that they couldn't quite pull it out for him and losing in overtime. But we're gonna get through today. Little tired, a little extra coffee, but we'll be all right.
Was a tough one for the Predators last night. They fall 2-1 in overtime against the Colorado Avalanche. Cale Makar, the game winner. Nathan MacKinnon scoring the goal for the Avalanche early in the game. Yakov Trenin, the lone tally for the Predators in that game. So a low-scoring game was not necessarily a low-event game. You know, that was kind of the term when Peter Laviolette was here that he used to throw out all the time of, well, that was kind of a low-event game. I don't think you can describe that last night as low-event. Connor Ingram was sensational. As you said, Chase, we'll get into more of his performance coming up here in just a few minutes. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You know, they came out last night, Chase, and the start, you know, I thought relatively speaking was good. Now, obviously, yeah, it was better than game one, and, you know, I was watching the game last night.
Wasn't too far to go there.
Yeah, I was about to say, they said that, like, if they said that once on the TNT broadcast, they probably said it 50 times. And I was like, all right, guys, we get it. Game one was a bit of a struggle for the Predators in the first period. I thought they weathered the storm nicely, and then all of a sudden, you know, Jeremy Lauzon makes a bad decision in the offensive zone. He pinches up, and some guy named Nathan MacKinnon's going the other way. It's a two-on-one, and kind of felt on that play like Ingram was trying to anticipate the pass a little bit and gave MacKinnon just enough room. And when you give that guy some room, he's going to make you pay. And MacKinnon makes him pay, and they're off and running 1-0 in the first period. And I think a lot of Predators fans out there thought to themselves, oh, boy.
Here we go.
Here we go again. And to the Predators' credit, I thought they played really well after that for the rest of the first period. Yakov Trenin ties it up. Even beyond the Trenin goal, I thought they were carrying the play a little bit more. They had some sustained zone time offensively, got a couple of good looks, and it's 1-1 after the first period. And I think if you're the Predators, you probably felt pretty good about the game, felt good about the way you were playing in that game, and it's 1-1 after the first 20 minutes. And Chase, really from that point on, it felt like Colorado had the puck the whole game. I mean, it was from the second period until Cale Makar's goal in overtime. They were dominant, and Connor Ingram kept them in it, but that was a dominant performance last night from Colorado from the second period on.
Connor Ingram played his heart out, and after that first goal by MacKinnon, you could tell he kind of settled down, and things the game slowed down for him a little bit. I think he was wound up a little tight, but you know, MacKinnon comes at you like that, it's going to be hard for anybody to make that stop. But you know, that's where you have to minimize your mistakes. And, you know, I thought they were in big trouble because they kept taking dumb penalties. I even used a Mike Vrabel line on Twitter of, you know, with that. And I thought, man, this is going to end up being 5-1 again, and they're just going to get destroyed. But to their credit, they dug down deep and were able to kill off those penalties. But on the other side of it, when you don't capitalize on your own chances, granted, they were not giving you a lot of room to capitalize on those chances, but what little opportunities they had, you had to bury them, and they couldn't do it. And like you said, I think they played much better than they did the other night, especially in the first period. But Colorado is such a talented team that as the game goes on, they adjust and they just get better and better and better. And that's where I think the problem lies of just a matchup problem.
Well, Cale Makar had 23 shot attempts last night. He had 12 on goal, 11 that were blocked. I mean, he was everywhere for Colorado last night. And it felt like every time the Predators, you know, got the puck back from the second period on, they didn't have anything left in the tank because they've been defending the whole time. So when you get the puck back, you get to the red line and you chip it in, you make the line change, and there you are right back again on defense. I mean, it was kind of a never-ending cycle of that last night for the Predators. And yet, Chase, it's 1-1 near the end of the second period, and it looks like Colorado scored a goal, and it's pretty clearly goaltender interference, I thought. Now, I say that, and I was looking at the review. I was like, I have no clue what they're going to call here, just because that's the way things go in the NHL with goaltender interference. But, you know, Lehkonen was basically sitting on Ingram by the time that he was pushed in there by Fabro. So I thought it was the right call that they brought that off the board. But that's a power play for the Predators. And then quickly into the third period, it turns into a 5-on-3 power play. And with everything that's happened, how dominant Colorado was in the second period, it's 1-1. You got a 5-on-3 power play, and you just didn't do much with it. Josi had a couple of good looks. Gave them a 2-on-1. You know, Forsberg put one off the post there. But other than that, it was not the 5-on-3 that you're searching for. And, look, I'll be honest, that was kind of the point where I felt like that was it. That was their opportunity to capitalize here, and they couldn't do it. And by the time that 5-on-3 expired, it was right back to the same story of Colorado having the puck the rest of the period.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by you have to capitalize on your opportunities, and they didn't. And the unfortunate part, and, you know, I'm not going to get in the same headspace as Jared, but he did make a good point on Twitter. He's like, there was like $35 million on the ice on that 5-on-3, and they couldn't do anything with it. You shouldn't look at things necessarily that way, but he's got a point. I mean, those are the guys that you pay a lot of money. Forsberg's trying to get even more money to score those goals, and you know, quite frankly, Forsberg has just not been a factor, and that's a problem.
It's a big problem.
You know, that's the guy that, you know, and there are no excuses, whether the contract's lingering on his mind or whatever. This is the playoffs, so I don't know what's going on there. They got to figure it out. He's got to figure it out, because if he's completely taken out of this thing, then, and they already don't have much of a chance right now, but they have zero if Forsberg is not going to be a factor.
Well, on the 5-on-3, Josi, I mean, he took a couple slap shots, which I just thought they were settling for shots there. It's 5-on-3. Move the puck around. Yeah, a couple slap shots. Move the puck around and try to get Kemper going side to side. And just, I didn't think they really did that all that well. Now, the best chance on the 5-on-3, other than Forsberg's going off the post, was a missed shot by Josi, and it bounced off the inboard, and it came right to Duchesne. He just handcuffed him a little bit, and he had the wide-open net. But other than that, there wasn't much going on. You get to overtime. You know, Granlund had a couple of good looks early in the overtime, but the Predators were basically in survival mode. And then, as good as Connor Ingram was, and again, we'll get to that here in just a second, Cale Makar finally sneaks one through, and all of a sudden you're down 0-2, and if you're going to win the series, you got to win 4 of the next 5. And given the way the first two games have gone, that seems like as big of an uphill climb as this team may have ever had in the history of their playoffs.
Yeah, it would be tough because, I mean, to your point of the shots that they got on net, it got to the point in the third period in overtime that – they were just simply just passing the puck towards the net and hoping something happened.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was – they couldn't get a clean shot. They couldn't set up a play. They were getting smothered by Colorado. And that's a credit to Colorado and just how they can play both sides of it, both they're dangerous offensively, they're dangerous defensively, all at the same time. You know, I didn't think Kemper really had to necessarily do a whole lot because – his teammates were smothering the puck around him. So
I don't think you're worrying about Kemper's fatigue heading into game 3 based on the first two games.
No, but I am Ingram. I mean, you know, because he and I know that John Hines yesterday said he didn't rule out the possibility of UC Saros in game 3. I'll believe that when I see 74 on the ice, but you know, it at this point, what I worry about at this point is, are you desperate, and so do you rush him? Even though Ingram is the reason that game went to overtime. I mean, Ingram was tremendous, so I'm not really worried about that part. I mean, the guy has stopped. We were just talking about this. I think, was it 79 of 83 in his two appearances? So that's pretty darn good for a rookie in the Stanley Cup playoffs against Colorado.
Well, and, you know, kind of moreover on that, it's heading into the series, what was the weakness for the Predators that we thought outside of just the matchup? Because, I mean, it's pretty clear. I mean, let's be honest here. Colorado is clearly the better team, and that's been made very obvious through the first two games. But the weakness was you don't have Saros and goaltending heading into this series. And last night, your goaltender gave you every chance to win that game with the way that he played. And to me, if the Predators, if you're going to hang around in a series like this, if your goalie plays like that, especially your third goalie plays like that, that's a game you have to win. And, you know, Colorado, to their credit, I think they've learned how to play in those games the last few years in the playoffs, and their young core has started to figure that out. But that was exactly the game last night where if you're the Predators, your goalie gave you a chance to win, and you didn't do it. And, look, I don't know about you, and we'll talk about Connor Ingram. Maybe he can replicate that performance. But to me, like, it's hard to ask any goaltender to play much better than he played last night, and you still lost the game. That's a tough pill to swallow if you're the Predators this morning.
Yeah, and you've given Colorado more tape. I mean, that's the other thing that, you know, they didn't have a lot of tape on him. They saw him in game one, but that was it. So now you've given them more film to look at, and he left it out on the ice. So I mean, you're asking a guy that's not used to this kind of intensity now to turn around 2 days later and try and do the same thing.
We are off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie Stanley alongside Chase McCabe here with you in for Joe. Joe's back on Monday. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we will get into the performance by Connor Ingram last night. What I think was one of the all-time great Predators playoff performances that we've ever seen. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Music make you lose control. Let's go. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Chase McCabe, Kenny Adams here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We're live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Friday morning. Tough loss for the Predators last night in Game 2. They fall 2-1 at the hands of the Colorado Avalanche. They're down 0-2 in this series coming back to Nashville on Saturday. Now, Chase, one thing you cannot blame last night if you're the Predators is the goaltending. Connor Ingram was sensational. I tweeted this out last night, and I still stand by it, even though the result of the game is what it is. I've watched every playoff game the Predators have ever played. I've seen a lot of really good performances. You know, we all remember some of them. Freddie Gaudreau in the playoffs. Right. You know, Pekka's had some great moments. The Vancouver series back in 2011 where Predators had no business being in that series from a talent perspective, and Pekka kind of carried them to game six of that series. Pekka against Chicago, Dan Ellis against Detroit. You know, you could throw out a lot of good examples of some great performances in the playoffs. I don't know that last night's performance by Ingram was the best, but it's up there. That was one of the greatest playoff performances that I think we've seen from a history of a Predators player, especially given the circumstances. You're the third goalie. You played in four NHL games to that point in your life, and you come in against the number one seed in the West and a team that, quite frankly, has just been kicking your butt through these first two games, and you make save after save after save and look calm while doing it. Like, it just – that was maybe the most amazing part is while he was under siege last night, never got rattled. He just kept his head in the game, played really well. I mean, the save he made on Kadri on that play where you got to push across from left to right there, or excuse me, from right to left there and make that save on the one-timer, it's just absurd, the save that he made. And he made a couple of those last night. It was an all-time Predators playoff performance from Connor Ingram last night.
No, I agree with that. And it reminded me of – you talk about being under siege, and I'm not – this is not a comparison by any means. It did remind me of those times where Pekka would just be getting peppered, and it's like he got better. He just the more shots he faced, the better he got. And that was Connor Ingram last night. And that diving save that he made in the third period, I was like, this is it. That, you know, that puck was going in, and he does Superman stuff and saves it. And I was just amazed. It was like, this was the performance of the kid's life, and showing that he belongs. Like, he's, you know, I know it's one game, but I think the small sample size that you've seen, and, you know, did he blow a 4-0 lead? Sure. Yeah, that did happen. But I think he's showing you enough right now that he's probably going to be this team's backup next year. I don't think there's any question at that point. And, you know, you want your starter to be the guy that is in this situation, but if you have to go to the backup, you want to be able to trust that guy to get you through until your starter's ready to go. And I think right now this team trusts Connor Ingram, and kudos to John Hines for really looking at this, taking the time to think about it on the day off, and then announcing it yesterday morning. It wasn't like, you know, Peter Laviolette still wouldn't tell us who was in that.
No.
You know, today, even though you just watched the game. John Hines going ahead and saying it's going to be Ingram. It was the right move. You had to make that move after game one, and it certainly – they didn't get the win, but, you know, you certainly were in that one till the very end because of Connor Ingram.
Well, he was great, and, you know, that's got to give you, I think, at least a little bit of confidence if you're a player, if you're a fan, whoever, moving forward as they come back home. Number one, I mean, regardless of who's in goal, you're going to have to possess the puck a little bit more than they've done the first two games, and we'll see as to whether or not the Predators are able to do that when they've got their home crowd. But, you know, you feel like you got a chance in net with Connor Ingram. I saw some of this last night of, like, well, what would have happened if you started Ingram in game one? I don't know.
Like, I don't know.
It's I think it's pointless to kind of go back and have that exercise now that game one's done. I mean, the Predators were awful in game one. So would the goaltender have made that big of a difference? Maybe it's 2-0 instead of 5-0. Maybe it's 3-0 instead of 5-0. You're still in a world of hurt at that point. But I just thought last night when the MacKinnon goal went in and it was 1-0, I was like, okay, how is he going to respond to this? Because that building was erupted. Alive. It was ready. And look, it's pretty obvious. Colorado fans, they're ready for this. They think this is the team that may win them a cup. So the atmosphere in Colorado.
It very well might be.
And it very well might be. Colorado, I mean, the atmosphere in Colorado through the first two games has been awesome. So it's been fun to watch that. But a young guy being in that situation in the playoffs for the first time, your first start in the playoffs, I was blown away at how composed he was. I mean, we see veteran NHL goaltenders that can't stay as composed as Connor Ingram was last night. And to me, if you're David Poile and you're John Hines and you're looking at him, just him and his part in this series, that's got to give you a whole lot of confidence as you move forward here.
Yeah, oh, I think so. I mean, I think that is going to help the decision in, you know, if you go to Saros today or, you know, when they get back and it's like, okay, he could go, probably would be best to wait a little while longer. It makes that decision a lot easier. Because you look at the performance since he came in, like game one and then all of game two with Connor Ingram, and you just think, all right, let's go ahead and just stick with him, because I think he's got this. He's keeping us upright and where we need to be, even though we haven't won. You know, he's keeping us in this series right now. So let's just stick with Connor Ingram. So it's, to your point earlier, it's how do you get offense going? And, you know, I said yesterday, you and I said this yesterday, that the herd line needed to do something and that I wanted to see Trenin or Janot get the puck on net and score some goals. Well, Yakov Trenin was listening. He was paying attention, and he did that. And that's great, and that they need some of that. But I need Forsberg. I need, you know, Duchesne had two in the first game, Johansson, Granlund, like the top players need to play that way. I think Yossi it's a prime example of he's trying to do too much because he has to. And so he needs some help around him. You know, I said to you in the break that Dante Fabbro made one of the best plays that I've ever seen him make. And you quickly pointed out, well, he was out of position. And those are the mistakes that you have to clean up if you're the Predators. I think Carrier had a bounce back game. But, you know, you got to put some consistent type play together if you want to beat this team.
Well, and, you know, John Hines talked about after the game last night, that was a game that was a little closer to their identity. And I would agree with that in the first period. I, you know, from the second period on, it was pure survival mode from the Predators. Yeah. Like, I mean,
Colorado didn't allow them to have their
identity. Yeah, and look, we've talked about being physical with this Colorado team. And the Predators, I mean, there were a lot of hits last night, don't get me wrong. But did you ever feel like there was a point where the Predators were wearing down Colorado? I mean, no. I don't think that's happened at all through the first two games. It's hard to do that when they've got the puck the whole game. I mean, it's been pretty impressive to watch Colorado through these first two games. And if you're the Predators, you need some of your big-time players to make a play for you. Like, Forsberg had a great play last night. I think it was – it may have been in the overtime where he's coming in the zone and makes a great move and gets a backhand shot from the slot. And I thought to myself, there was a juicy rebound there. That could have been the chance for the Predators. But between that shot from Forsberg and the one he put off the post on the 5-on-3, those are really the only two positive plays that I remember from Forsberg last night. And I'm sure he may have had another one, but those are the only two that I remember. And that just can't happen. Like, if you're going to have any chance to win a game in this series. Like, you need him to be better. And it's just
– he's
been far too invisible. And it's not just him. I mean, you know, Duchesne, I know he's got two goals – I hadn't noticed a whole lot from Duchesne in this series. Johansson hasn't brought much to the table in this series. I think the way I described it earlier is kind of what it feels like. It just kind of feels like they're surviving out there, and that's not a good spot to be in.
No, and, you know, I'll use last night's slate as a whole as an example. You know, Pittsburgh won game one against the Rangers, you know, in overtime. It took extra, but – you kind of knew that, all right, Rangers were going to turn it up a notch because they're the better team. Rangers could very well come out of the East to the Stanley. I saw that team live and in person. That's a damn good
team. They're good.
Okay, so they responded. Florida, you knew that response was coming because Florida is a dangerous team. That happened. They destroyed Washington 5-1. Calgary and Dallas was closer, but you know, you knew Dallas had to put up a fight, and they did. They survived. That's the difference.
Yep.
They survived enough to force Calgary to have to pull the net, and they win 2-0, but they had gotten that goal, and so they went into survival mode, and it worked. For the Predators, it just any type of offensive chance they tried, Colorado had an answer for. And it's a variety of reasons. It's the fact that Colorado's just so good. It's the fact that you have your top players, as you mentioned, just not playing to their full potential for whatever reason. And that's a dangerous combination. And my worry is, even though you're coming back to Bridgestone Arena, we all know what this atmosphere is like in the playoffs. I'm curious of how the crowd's going to be. I think it's going to be pretty good, and everybody's going to be into it because they know this is really your last chance. If you lose game three, then – it's going to be really tough in my mind to win on Monday. But the fan base knows that. How do you respond to that? Is that going to be enough for you to put something together to beat this Colorado team?
We'll take your reaction to game two between the Preds and the Avs last night. A 2-1 loss by the Predators in overtime to Colorado. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on the Preds on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Liam on the text line says, what a shame to waste such an amazing game by Ingram. Do you think Forsberg has checked out? Since not getting his deal, he has seemed pretty disinterested. I bet he's gone. This is coming from Liam on the text line. I don't think he's checked out. I don't know really how to explain what we've seen through the first two games, other than Colorado has just been totally dominant. Now, I said this heading into the series, and I think it's been pretty obvious now at this point through two games. Everybody made so much of Colorado's offense, and I understand it because they're very dynamic. I think they're third in the league in goals per game, so I understand why people were talking about the offense. They were sixth in the league in goals against per game, too. They defend really well. And what stood out to me, Chase, and this, I'd put Forsberg in this conversation. I'd put Johansson. I'd put Duchesne. I'd put Granlund. I'd pretty much put all of them. It feels like every time the Predators get the puck and they're breaking out and they're trying to either have a 3-on-2 coming into their zone or try to get some sort of offense established. You turn around and whatever the break was for the Predators, it's gone.
It's
because
gone.
Cale Makar's back or Sam Girard's back.
Yep.
I mean, think about the goal they scored last night. It was a goal that got scored. It's a great shot by Trennan, but the play happened because the puck squirted through Sam Girard's leg there and ended up creating a 2-on-1. I mean, he was still in position, just mishandled the puck. Like, it's been pretty incredible to watch the team speed of Colorado. It's been they've been in a different gear than the Predators have been in.
And here's the other part of this too. You know, you everything you just said is absolutely 100% true. But the other part is they're so the whatever unit is out there is so gassed by the time they actually get the puck and break down into their zone that the only choice they have is to dump it in, do the line change, and then see what they can do. But I watched several times, especially in the third period, that the Duchesne's unit was out there. They would get trapped in their own zone. Ingram would make a couple of big saves. They would finally poke the puck out, but they could barely get back to the bench because they were just so spent from trying to stop Colorado and Colorado's speed, like you said. So that's the other part of it, is they can't have any time where they're not getting stretched thin trying to defend and then be able to put something together offensively. And that, you know, I don't know how you fix that. That's Colorado. I mean, Colorado is one of those teams that's just on another level right now, and they still got work to do. You know, we were talking during the break, very well could come back here to Nashville and the Predators get those two and it's all of a sudden a new series. But you know, it's home ice advantage is a big thing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you now have it for the next two games. So the last change, how John Hines uses the last change, is going to be one of the things that I'm paying attention to, because Bednar has done a really good job with the matchups having that last change at home.
He has, and I mean, on McKinnon's goal last night, you get caught out there with your third pair out there against him. And look, Borowiecki did the best he can back there on that 2-on-1, but it's Nathan McKinnon. You know, Lozon, I thought it was a horrible decision to pinch up on that play. And, you know, Gretzky talked about that on the panel. It was a bad decision by Lozon last night. But, you know, you're going to have better control of that at home. Quite frankly, though, right now, Chase, like, I don't think Jared Bednar's all that worried about the matchups. Like, they're so deep right now that I don't think he's going to be that concerned heading in. The question is, if you're John Hines, can you find anything that you like matchup-wise and exploit that? I mean, I think sometimes people make a little too much of the last change part of it, but there are benefits to it. And if there's a matchup that you really like, sometimes the way the game shakes out, you just can't really get to it all that much when you're on the road. You can get to it a little bit more at home. So if you're the Predators, I'd be spending today searching for what that matchup is on film and seeing if you can exploit that coming up in Game 3. As far as Forsberg, and we had Chip in Mount Juliet on the text line, says, we talked about this early in the year. Forsberg is streaky and disappears during the big games. I was chastised for that comment. Well, he is streaky. I don't think there's any question about that in the playoffs. Now, he is also in big games played really, really well for the Predators too.
Yeah.
So that's the version that you need of Forsberg. And I know he's probably getting the lion's share of the criticism right now. I understand why. He's got a contract coming up, and he's got to be better than he's been in the first two games for this team to have a chance. But it's everybody, man, right now.
Yeah.
It's everybody outside of Connor Ingram.
Yeah, and here's another thing too. This is not the be-all, end-all. I mean, they lost 2-1 in overtime, but I do question John Hines' decision to sit Phil Tomasino. I didn't really get that.
Yeah.
You're struggling to find offense right now. We talked about it yesterday that thought it was the right move to put Tolvanen in. Yeah, I mean, you didn't really see much of him. He was on one of the power play units, but I thought that was the right move, but I didn't understand taking Tomasino out. I mean, I know you're trying to establish this physical game, and that's why Olivier's in, but Tomasino hasn't really been the problem. Tomasino has I think, had a nice rookie year for you and has gotten better as the year has gone on. And like I said, a team struggling to find offense, you're going to take an offensive player out. I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, and look, I understand the Matthew Olivier part of this in terms of you want to be physical. He's not bringing anything in this series. Like, it's almost a waste of time having him out there, I think. You know, you get Tolvanen back in there. Hey, look, you know, we've got a text on the text line talking about, you know, Cunning on the second line. At this point, I don't know what the answer is on the second line. I mean, Cunning, I've made my thoughts on Cunning very clear this year. He's not a top six forward. You can try to make him a top six forward all you want, and you could keep trying to force that square peg into a round hole. It hasn't worked. It's not going to work, and that's what the Predators have got to realize as they move forward here. But right now, today, with the roster as is, I don't know what you do with the second line. You've tried Tolvanen on the second line. It hasn't worked. You've tried Cunning on the second line. It hasn't worked. Tomasino, I agree. I thought he should have been in there last night, but it's not like Tomasino on the second line's been lining up either. So the simple fact of the matter is there's not an answer on the second line, and there hasn't really been all year, and that's what you got to figure out as you move forward.
Well, I think there you're right. There's not an answer, but there could have been one. He just wouldn't try it, and that's put Janot and Tomasino together on the second line, and he's just – he has been hesitant to do that, and it's because you don't want to break up the herd. I get it. But if you're insistent on leaving Olivier in the lineup, I go back to what I said yesterday.
Yeah.
Put the original herd back together with Olivier on there and put Tomasino and Janot on that second line with Johansson. That's what I would do.
Yeah, and you know, at this point I don't expect that to happen just because it hadn't happened yet. I don't know why it would happen by game three, but I hear you. I mean, we've talked about that this year, too, and, you know, Darren McFarland's made his thoughts very clear on that. But the second line right now, you know, everybody's going to get all over Johansson, and I understand it, and there were people last night talking to me about Johansson, like, what's he doing? He's got to be better, so I'm not trying to excuse him. But I really don't know what you expect from Ryan Johansson when you've got Cunning and Tolvanen playing with you right now. I've talked about that all year. Like, this is why I said at the trade deadline – if you're going to keep this thing together and you're not going to trade Forsberg, you probably need to go find somebody that can play with either Ryan Johansson or Mikael Granlund on the second line. And I think the Predators may have tried that. I mean, there's some rumblings that they were in on Phil Kessel, and it just didn't work out at the end of the day. So I'm not saying that David Poile and the Predators didn't try to do that.
Honk if you've heard
that
before.
But this is what I'm talking about. Like, they have zero threat on the second line and can't win the playoffs that way.
Yeah, no, I agree, and we've all heard the same thing that they may have been trying, but right now this is the issue that you have, and I don't really know what the solution is. I don't think there is one, you know, for the rest of these playoffs. It's just like we've been saying, it's survival mode.
Yeah, that's what it is. And if you're the Predators, you know, you're coming back home for Game 3 on Saturday. To me, this is the chance where, in terms of starting the game differently, what could this team look like if they got a lead in this series?
Yeah.
I mean, they've not approached that at this point. Even last night, I know it's 1-1, but you just play a little differently when you have the lead. I think this team in particular, and John Hines has talked about that, plays differently when they have the lead. So it'd be nice to see what that looks like on Saturday in Game 3 if they can come out and do that. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got some of your thoughts to get to on Facebook as well. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Listen up, y'all, because this is it.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Chase McCabe, Kenny Adams, intern Nick here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your reaction to an overtime loss for the Preds last night. They fall 2-1 at the hands of the Colorado Avalanche. They're coming back to Nashville down 0-2. And Chase, what I think you're right. It's not technically a must win, and we have seen teams come back from 0-3 down in the NHL before, but you got to win on Saturday if you're the Predators.
I don't know. I would almost put it in a must-win category that, you know, is a phrase that is overused a lot, especially this time of year. But I think you got to establish that this is your house, and the only way to do that is by winning the game.
Well, look, let's just be honest here, okay? I'm not saying the Predators can't win on Saturday, and I'm not saying they can't even this thing up 2-2 because, look, they were down 0-2 to Carolina last year. They came back home and evened it up 2-2. They were down back in 0-4 in a series they had no business hanging around in against Detroit. They evened it up 2-2. Same thing in 0-8 with Detroit. So we've seen this happen.
They could use 2-2.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, give them a call. We've seen this happen before where it looks like the Predators are just totally outmatched, and then they come back home and they tie the series up. So I'm not saying that that can't happen coming up this weekend, but let's be honest here. Winning four out of the next five games against this Colorado team, it just seems like such an uphill climb. Like, I was trying to figure this out last night. You know, even Carolina last year, the first two games didn't go very well for the Predators. And then they came back, and it was a different story at Bridgestone. I guess I would just be – I'd be surprised if it's 2-2 at the end of this. I'm not saying – I think they can get one coming back home, and we'll see what happens on that front. But the first two games, it's just been so dominant by Colorado. And really the only reason you were in the game yesterday was your goalie, and maybe Ingram can play that way as you move forward. Maybe you do get Saros back coming up in Game 3. You know, as you said earlier, John Hines didn't rule that out. I'd be surprised, but yeah, maybe that happens in Game 3. But it has been – they've played seven periods of hockey at this point in this series. And really, outside of the first period yesterday, Colorado has been in complete control the entire time.
Yeah, and I think – obviously the first period of Game 1 – the Predators were not – they forgot to get off the bus.
Yeah.
They weren't ready to play. I would say yesterday, last night's game, they obviously were. You mentioned the first period, played a really good first period. Periods 2 and 3 they were just outmatched. It was simply – it wasn't that they were – you know, can they play better? We've talked about Forsberg and Duchesne and those guys. But I just think it's – Colorado's that good. And that's the problem. You just can't match up with them because, you know, this is why I was beating the drum of don't worry about the regular season series. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because Colorado, the good teams, the Stanley Cup caliber teams, really do have another level that they go to in playoff time. Colorado's done that. I mean, Cale Makar is one of the best defensemen in the league. He and Yossi are duking it out. I mean, the Norris has already decided, but they've duked it out all year for the Norris Trophy. McKinnon is McKinnon, and they have a ton of complementary pieces that help them. They don't have the best goaltender. That's the thing. Goaltending is not really the reason why I would say they're going to potentially win the Cup. Now, he's good. He's solid enough that – you know, he can keep him in games. He obviously did it last night.
I mean, he was
when
on a,
he did get
yeah, he was
shots
on
him.
Beach vacation last night from the second period on.
Oh yeah. I mean, last night he hardly had to work. So, you know, that's the thing. It's just they're so dangerous around him. But yeah, that's why I think you got to try and establish something early at Bridgestone Arena. Feed off the crowd. You know, because you know that they're going to do towel waivers and anthems and all the things that you expect here in Nashville to get the crowd hype. And it's the first time, you know, last year they were pretty much close to capacity, but it wasn't full capacity. You have that now. So we know what this playoff atmosphere can be like, and they got to use it.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Bob from Antioch, who wants to weigh in. Bob, thanks for calling into Robbie and Rex Road.
Good morning, guys. I totally agree with you. They just look like they're overmatched. This series reminds me of some of the early series that the Predators played, like against the Red Wings when the Red Wings were dominant, and then also against the Blackhawks when they were primed up. They just they look much more overmatched than they did last year. And you know, I feel like they're. I don't know if they would have beaten Calgary. I don't think that they would have, but I think that it would have been much more competitive. I think they're paying the price for losing that game, you know, to the Coyotes and also losing to a lot of those other weaker teams. They would have had a much better shot. Not that they would have won the series, but, you know, I just feel like they're kind of paying that price.
Thanks for the call, Bob. I mean, I think he's dead on there. You know, I watched a little bit of the Calgary-Dallas game last night on the other screen that I had in the bonus room last night. And, I mean, it was kind of a boring game, but that's the way that the Calgary and Dallas like to play, is kind of that muck things up in the middle. And, you know, Dallas kind of lulled them into their game last night. But I agree with Bob. Like, I don't think the Predators would have won the series against Calgary. But so far, I mean, this is looking like a pretty gigantic mismatch through the first two games. Now, can you change that narrative coming back home in game three? And can you come out with a swell of energy where you've got the puck and you're dictating the play? And can that be good enough in game three? Yeah, we'll see. We've seen that happen before. But right now, it's they've been way overmatched the first two games.
My whole thing that I want to see now is, you know, obviously I want to see them win. I want to see them win at home. But at least last night, I think you and I can sit here today and go, they put up a fight. It was one of those fights of, like, you got the David versus Goliath, and David didn't win this time, but that's what it was. But they put up a fight. You know, there was no fight in game one.
Yeah.
They were just completely manhandled. I want to see them keep putting up a fight, you know, against the Colorado Avalanche. And, you know, you do that enough, then you might steal one. I mean, that's what it's going to take. And I really thought Ingram was going to steal one last night, but unfortunately they did not.
Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line and welcome in Dave from Mount Juliet, who wants to weigh in. Dave, thanks for calling into Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, good morning, guys. So I need to talk about my frustration, and let me just say to start off with, I really didn't think the Preds belonged in the playoffs. I the way that the second half of the season just kind of just slowly just being dismantled and the poor play. So it was just frustrating, and just being in the playoffs, I didn't think we belonged there. Now, I'm going to be very optimistic, probably unfairly so, but I'm going to anyway. If you get rid of that first 5-6 minutes of game one, it hasn't been that much of a butt-whooping. Seriously, if you think about it, after those first 6 minutes after that, we've been pretty tight. We've been playing with those guys. And the thing that frustrates me and has for years, I just don't understand why the Preds don't shoot the puck. I mean, we had a 5-3 man advantage, and they keep passing back and forth, looking for that perfect shot. You just need to pepper the net with the puck, because things are going to go in there, especially with a goalie that's not all that great. You know, there's rebounds, there's, you know, misdirection, you know, people in the goalie's face. Just shoot the puck at the net. I mean, 5-3, and I think we got 3 shots on goal, and they were all from almost the center line, practically. So, we need to be more aggressive and just shoot, 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 shoot. I mean, I hate this, you know, pass, shoot. You know, looking for the perfect shot. It just doesn't happen in hockey, and especially against a team that is that much stronger and faster than you.
Hi, thanks for the call, Dave.
Yeah. I think the issue there, Dave, is you can't shoot through somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Shea Weber's not walking through that door. He's the only one I know that might be able to actually do that. But that's the problem, and that's a credit to Colorado, is they are just surrounding where the puck is going, and they're not giving you an open lane. I don't think it's as much the Predators looking for a perfect shot. They have been known to do that.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think this is that situation. I mean, you saw some of the best chances that they got last night was they were just simply just throwing it out there and hoping that it gets on net.
Well, there's too many one-and-dones right now. What I mean by that is you get the puck finally in the offensive zone, you get maybe one look at the net, and it either there's a save made or it doesn't get through or it goes wide, and then all of a sudden Colorado's got the puck, they're going back the other way. There's not much sustained offensive zone pressure right now. Now, the 5-on-3 is different, to Dave's point. I did think they got a little too cute on the 5-on-3. Like, you got to move the puck around and work people side to side. When you got the numbers advantage that way, I did not like the way they approached that 5-on-3. But, you know, part of this goes back to what I said earlier. They have been on their heels so much in this series. And I agree with Dave that outside of the first, you know, 6-7 minutes of the first period in game one, score-wise, it has been relatively even. And it's not been, you know, a butt kick in that way. The flow of the game has not been even. I mean, Colorado has totally dominated the first two games. So I think part of the offensive chances or lack thereof that we're talking about, by the time you get the puck back, you're gassed. I mean, they've just been defending the whole time, over and over again. So I don't know how you change that other than making better decisions with the puck. I still think the Predators are getting burned sometimes with decisions that they're making, either not chipping the puck out of the zone, not being able to get it out, some bad passes in the neutral zone. That's going to happen from time to time, but I feel like that's happened too much as of late, and it's just hard to sustain any zone time offensively against Colorado if that's the way you're going to play. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Preds. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Hang with us on our phone line as well. We'll get to you coming up on the other side. The Preds are in the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs, and we need you at Bridgestone Arena coming up in games 3 and 4. Preds in a tough spot in the series, but nothing that a little home ice advantage can't fix. Round one playoff tickets are on sale now at NashvillePredators.com/tickets. These are the games that you don't want to miss. Epic goals, massive wins, and historic moments. If you've never been to a playoff game at Bridgestone Arena, you need to check that out. It's quite the experience. Visit NashvillePredators.com/tickets to be there for all the action. Stand with us, Smashville, and paint the town Preds. That's NashvillePredators.com/tickets.